So you are tuned to 90.7 WGXE, Acra, Catskill, and Hudson. We are in the midst of our dead air pledge drive, 697-7400. Consider what your creative community radio station means to you, and pick up the phone and give us a call. Our operators are standing by now, waiting to hear from you. I had a call from Tom Scrimbus earlier. I made a mistake with Democracy Now. It was echoing itself. It was like I had two applications of it open, and Tom Scrimbus called, and he said that he would rather hear it like that. So, sorry, Tom, we can't play it like that, but I'd rather hear it like that, too. The New World Odor, he said. Okay, so I've got two guests here. Would you guys like to introduce yourselves from the Cairo Historical Society?
Yes, good morning. I'm Sylvia Hausenkopf. I'm one of the officers of the Cairo Historical Society.
And my name is Sherry True, and I'm also with the Historical Society.
Thank you guys for coming down. I guess for starters, could you tell us a little bit about the Cairo Historical Society before we get into the event, so for dummies like myself?
Certainly. The Cairo Historical Society is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. Our mission really is to preserve and present Cairo's history. We want to bring history alive, get people excited about their past, because yesterday is tomorrow's history. So for us, it's capturing those moments in pictures, in lectures, in journals, in books, whatever we can, so that people get excited about where they live. Cairo's a beautiful place. Everybody that's on the board is very excited about the programs and the projects we're involved in, and I think that enthusiasm boils over into our community. We're very much involved in the Hometown Heroes program that you see all the banners along Main Street and so on. They're just coming down this week. But things like that are bringing our community together and giving us, I think, a little bit of a soul.
How did the Hometown Heroes thing get started? That's something that I don't live in Cairo, but we do go to the library there as we were talking before we had you on the air. And I noticed them, and I kind of thought it was really a neat idea. If every community could do that, I think it would kind of connect people to other people, you know, and the sacrifices people are making emotionally, physically, and how did that get started, if you don't mind? It's a little tangent, but...
Yeah, that's okay. Well, actually, it all started a few years ago. My husband and I and another couple who are members of the Cairo Historical Society, we were on a bike ride out in Pennsylvania, and we were going through a town, and I saw these banners on the lampposts. They were very faded, but they were of the military men that are currently serving over in Afghanistan. And I thought to myself, wow, we're a historical society. Wouldn't it be really cool if we did something like that, but took the banners all the way back to as far as we can go? You know, and in fact, today we have 250 banners along all the many of the main roads within the hamlets of the town of Cairo. And they are for individuals that served from the French and Indian War all the way up to the present day. Technically, the gentleman who served in the French and Indian War did not serve under America. He was a British officer, but he was also one of our first settlers into the town of Cairo, so we let him in with a bye.
I think it's good for collective morale to do that.
I think so, too. We have people that say, you know, every time I drive by my dad's or my brother's or my uncle's or even my mother's banner, I get a tear in my eye. So I think it's just an opportunity for us as a community and certainly the Cairo Historical Society as an organization to remember and honor the men and women who sacrificed by serving in the military. And we don't mean just in wartime. People sacrifice even in peacetime. I mean, they're all over the place. They're not with their families most of the time. They're serving because they believe in their country and they believe in the safety of the people that live in this country. And we want to honor that. And that's why we did what we did.
I think it's great because I think for me, the way I see it, there's kind of a disconnect from non-military folk, especially during wartime. People kind of develop this idea of, you know, anti-war, this, that, but there's actually individuals who are doing it for work or for philosophical reasons and making a living, and I think it's good to draw attention. So
Yes, thank you. Well, we are writing the Hometown Heroes book right now. We are writing the stories of each and every man and woman who's on our banners. There's 250 of them. We have less than 100 of those biographies to write, and the book will be out probably in early 2016. We tried to do it really hard by Christmas, but there's only two of us who are writing all of these, and we invest at least 10 hours in each biography by the time it's fine-tuned. But we will have the stories behind each and every one of these people, and in writing those stories, it's become amazing to me how truly personal each man or woman's service was, what they did, what they experienced. I'm working on one right now where the gentleman was working on a cargo ship. He was in the Navy, and he was protecting the cargo ships as they went back and forth from Europe in World War II, and every ship was shot out from under him, and one of the times he was actually on a raft for 8 days. I mean, it was such a cool story. I mean, nobody knows about them, and the man's still alive.
That's awesome. Yeah. I think being ambitious, but next time you come on.
Yes, love to talk about it.
Now, that's not even why you guys are here. No. This is easier than I thought. It was a little daunting to have this is my first interview, so.
You're doing great.
So let's talk about this event at the Caro Historical Society. On November 7th, you're having an archaeologist, a local archaeologist?
Yes, his name is Jay Ciccone, and he is the only archaeologist that there is in Greene County. So we're really pleased to have him come in and do a lecture for us in regards to the Native Americans that are within the area. So, and it's going to be at the Carroll Library,
mm-hmm.
and it will start at 1 o'clock, $5 to get in. We really encourage folks to do... to get their tickets ahead of time, because we're really not sure of how many people will be attending, and we do have limited space. But this is going to be an awesome, awesome presentation.
Where can the tickets be purchased ahead of time? This is November 7th, 1 p.m. at the Caro Library, and the tickets can be purchased there?
No, they can be purchased at the door, but to guarantee your seat,
right,
I recommend.
Ahead of time.
Yeah. Because we hear a lot of people are coming, and mm-hmm. as you know, we have an X size room. So we guarantee seats if we get payment beforehand. And to do that, give me a call, Sylvia Hosenkopf, at 518-821-3852, and then we can figure out how to make that payment happen. And the only reason we're doing that is because we are expecting a rather full
large
house.
Group, yeah.
Awesome. So what will the program entail? Perhaps we can get into that.
The program will entail all of the... It's an interesting thing. Jay's so knowledgeable about this area and for how the natives actually came here. And a lot of the stuff that he does is with artifacts. He's gotten a huge collection. So we are also encouraging folks to come in with their collection so that Jay can kind of take a look at it. And
oh,
also,
that's neat. Yeah,
yeah, and kind mm-hmm. of, you know, like tell a little stories about, you know, that specific artifact.
What can you tell me about the natives of this area?
Well, the natives of this area, I mean, I'm a professional historian and genealogist. This is what I do every day.
Mm-hmm.
I also write articles for the Greenville Pioneer, so I'm in the midst of writing a two-part article about the natives of Greene County. The first one is right now out and available at, Hannaford's and Stewart's and Cumberland Farms and such. And I was describing, about the Indians, as we called them back in the old days, but the Native Americans who were in this area.
I'm still not sure how to...
I know, how to be politically correct.
and I don't mean any disrespect, but I'm no. just... I'll just call them Natives, I guess.
Natives.
So, yeah.
Yeah, they were... people were saying, well, who lived in Greene County? You know, were they the Mohawks? You know, were they the Mohicans? Who were they? Tell us about them. Well, in reality, the vast majority that lived in the west side of the Hudson River up until about the Coxsackie area over to before Schoharie were the Lenni Lenape, who were an Algonquin-speaking native group. They're the Delaware Indians, from down in Delaware and Maryland. That's what they called them because they lived along the Delaware River.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, if you're looking at any kind of scientific documents, they call them the Lenni Lenape. Fairly peaceable group, who hunted and fished, lived along the plains, along the rivers. So down by Catskill, where they were going to build the Walmart, that big plain there at the corner,
yeah,
and they were going to put a Walmart there, and for two reasons they did not. One, they were that was one of the areas of the Indian villages and their fields, and there are burials in that area, but also because it floods every time the Catskill goes crazy. But that is the kind of the typical location that you would see, you know, a Lenni Lenape village. They would grow corn and squash. They would grow, you know, like the field vegetables, you know, for the most part. And then the men would hunt. And that would sustain them, you know. And they lived in wigwams for the most part, what we would call teepees, made out of bark and so on, and hide. So it was a very interesting people. These are the people that met Henry Hudson when he dropped ship in the Halva Moon down at the mouth of the Catskill River. So, and they were very peaceable to him. You know, they provide him provisions and so on. And he describes them as being, you know, friendly and that sort of thing. Now, the Mohicans were on the east side of the Hudson River for the most part. And the Mohawks were to the west of Greene County in Schoharie and to the north in the Albany and north of that. Now, of course, the Mohicans and the Mohawks were bitter rivals, and they would fight. So who was stuck in the middle? The Lenni Lenape. So you'll see all kinds of historical markers and tales of Indian footpaths that crisscross Greene County. And it really was, you know, the hunting parties and sometimes the warring parties of the Mohicans and the Mohawks as they were duking it out for, you know, who was supreme.
This must have been a very interesting area pre-industrial.
I think it was, and I think, you know, we had a lot more trees. We had bears, we had cougars, what do you call them, mountain lions these days. You know, it was a wild area, and when the settlers came here, most of them came to the area of Caro after the Revolutionary War. Settlement was almost primarily along the Hudson River prior to that because there was really no way to get around. There were no roads. There was no way to supply yourself, so the Hudson River was the highway. And so you would see all the Dutch farms up and down the Hudson River, and further infield there was only a few scattering farms of men who took their families into the wilderness until after the Revolutionary War when the floodgates opened.
The river is truly fantastic, I think.
Well, you know, it's used
overlooked.
Yeah, you know, it used to be called the North River.
No, I didn't know that.
Yes, it's called the North River, which because it went north. I'm not exactly sure the date it was renamed the Hudson River, but it was called the North River well into the 1800s.
The number again to get tickets for this event, it was your number.
Yes, it's Sylvia Hosenkopf, 518-821-3852. You can certainly get more information about this event and other things the Caro Historical Society is doing by checking out our Facebook page. We have over 1,100 members that check out what we're doing and post pictures and make comments about history and things. We invite everybody to come check us out.
Now, you have a newsletter?
Yes.
Would you like to tell us about that, please? You told me briefly about it, so maybe you could expand on that and give folks a way that they could get in touch with their local history.
Sure. One of the ways, actually, that they can do it is to become a member. And by becoming a member, you do get the Caro Herald as a benefit of being a member. And we have different levels of membership. So I think it's on the website of, you know, what level of membership would fit into your family or business. And then we, you know, every 4 months we'll send out the newsletter. Every 3 months, I'm sorry. Every 3 months we'll
website,
send out.
Website, before I forget, if you don't mind.
Just Google Caro Historical Society.
Okay, just Google Caro Historical Society.
And we're also, hooked up with the Town of Caro website. So either way you can find us.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, the Caro Herald is really a dream come true for us. It was one of our long-term goals when we first got together 5 years ago, us three or four people sitting around the table, is that, A, we wanted to get a headquarters, B, we wanted to put out a quarterly journal. And this year we launched our first edition in July. Today we're launching the October edition. It's up to 18 pages in length. It's all kinds of news and events that have been going on in the town of Caro from a historical perspective. And it also has a number of great articles. articles. One of them's on Benny Richmond, one of our local legends. Another article about Sport Haven Air Park, which is colloquially known as the Caro Airport down at the end of Bross Street. What was the other ones? We have a couple other articles
we
in there.
We have the schoolhouse.
The schoolhouses, Caro schoolhouses. And, an article written about the county poorhouse. We did a dedication down there just recently.
The county poorhouse.
Yeah, the county poorhouse. It was in place for well over 170 years. The building still stands in Angelo Canna Park. We had petitioned the William G. Pomeroy Foundation for grants to get a historical marker, which they honored. And so last month, in fact, we put up the historical marker down there and had a little barbecue afterwards. It was a great event.
Oh, that's really cool.
So we have the story now in the Herald that talks about the actual county home, so people get an idea of why it was built and what it did and when it closed down.
And if folks want to get a copy of the Herald, we'll send out a hard copy for $5.
Right.
For those that are not members, but we highly encourage membership. It allows us to do a lot of different things, and the Herald is definitely one of the things that you definitely want to get to read.
So I'm picking up that this is a labor of love, not a business venture at all. the Historical Society.
I'd have to say so. The people on the board, we're all passionate about local history. We have a lot of great events that we're planning for next year. We have a State of the Union dinner coming up in February where we dress as presidents and their wives and welcome people for a great roast beef or ham dinner.
Wow, it sounds fun.
It is. I'm Martha Washington, by the way. Everybody asks me where George is. I says he's busy fighting the British.
Awesome. And headquarters, we talked briefly in the 10 minutes you arrived early about you don't have a building now.
Well, when we first actually got together with very small membership, an opportunity arose where somebody was looking to get rid of a building that they had. The person lived down in Arizona. He wanted to just divest himself of this property. It just so happened to be right across from the firehouse, linked pretty closely to where the public library was, and we all looked at each other and said that would be a great location for a historical society. So we were very honored that he donated the property to us, but we realized we needed a great deal of renovations and expansion of the building in order to do the things we wanted to do within a headquarters building. Currently, we have the building ready. It's going to be picked up and actually moved back from the existing site so that we can excavate an additional existing foundation. So for the current building, the foundation, and for an addition, that foundation as well. Then we'll bring the building and put it back down on the footprint and put the sewer in this year and be ready to start doing stick building next year.
I know you came to talk about an event, but I have some other questions. We'll get back to the event. WGXC, one of the things about community radio is it includes youth. And I was just thinking, are there young people interested in local history? I know that another thing we talked about in the 10 minutes before the program was the way history is taught, and it sort of becomes an aversion, I think, for some young people. So I think local history sometimes for the mind of a child might be, or a young person might be stuffy, but it's not. So are people interested, kids interested, teenagers?
Well, mostly teenagers at this juncture. Another one of the goals that we established way back was that we wanted to develop some kind of program that would, be of interest to children. And in fact, we do have something in the very early stages of planning that would be a yearly thing for children. And I'm hoping to have that move forward at some point this year with a launch in 2017, most likely. It's a fairly extensive project.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, for us, making history come alive is not just something that you listen to. It's something you see, you touch, you feel, and then you remember. And something I remembered growing up in school, the things that made me love history was that I had teachers that did that for me. And so today, I love history. I do it for a living, and I want to do that for the local kids.
To be inspired.
Exactly.
Yep.
Who knows? We might have the next historian somewhere in our school system.
Don't turn them off.
Exactly.
So the event, again, November 7th, 1 p.m., it's going to be at the Catskill Library.
Caro Library.
The Caro. Caro. Catskill. Caro. It's in, at the Caro Library. Beautiful place. I take my children down there. We really enjoy going there. And tickets, again, I know it's redundant, but in case anybody missed it, Sylvia, give you a call.
Yeah, no problem. Give me a call. Sylvia Hosenkopf, 518-821-3852. Or reach out to me at the Caro Historical Society Facebook page. Just pop a question up there, and I'll certainly answer it.
Check it out, guys. I'm going to play music for about 5 minutes, and then we're going to come back and talk. I'm going to grab a drink of water. One thing about interviewing, this is my first real interview, is I'm never sure about eye contact because, you know what I mean? We're talking, but so anyway, we'll be back in a couple minutes here. Stay tuned, 90.7 WGXC, your community station. And to remind you, we are in the midst of our Dead Air Pledge Drive. Consider for a moment what your station means to you. You have access to this station. Just call us up. We have guests right now that just showed interest, and here they are on the air to tell about their event. And it makes this community a little smaller and plugs you in a little deeper. So I'll be back again in a couple minutes here. Here's some Bill Evans for a couple minutes. You're tuned to 90.7 WGXC. We are in the midst of our Dead Air Pledge Drive, 697-7400. Consider making a donation to your station, the station that you can have access to if you so desire. And I have some local folks with me right now. Sylvia is going to read about the first... You set this up for me again? I'm tongue-tied.
No problem. One of the things that we're really fortunate about is that we had people that wrote a lot of the histories of Greene County in the mid-1800s when there were still memories of contact between, the settlers and the Indian population, the Native American population at the time. But one of the books was written by the Reverend Charles Rockwell and published in 1867. And from that, he actually quotes first contact between Henry Hudson and his crew and the Native American population along the Hudson River. And I'd like to read a little bit of what he says because it's very telling, I think, in terms of talking about the different tribes, because, you know, not all of them were the same, just as we are today, all different in different countries and locations. So basically, the journal that was written by one of the men that were on the Half Moon ship in 1609 starts with September the 11th. Several canoes full of Indian warriors having come off to his vessel, he seized two of the Indians as hostages and, putting red coats on them, carried them with him up the river. Having passed the narrows, Indians came on board, making shows of love. The next morning, September 12th, 28 canoes made of hollowed trees and crowded with men, women, and children came off to the yacht. They were not permitted to come on board, but their oysters and beans were purchased. September 13th, the vessel was anchored just above Yonkers. September 15th, as the morning was misty, they anchored near West Point by the Matawan Mountains, the Indian name for the highlands. When the Half Moon was getting underway from there, the two Indian captives leaped from the portholes and, scornfully deriding the crew, swam ashore. Running 60 miles up the river, Hudson arrived near evening opposite the mountains which lie from the river's side and anchored near Catskill Landing, where he found a very loving people and very old men, this latter fact showing the healthful influence of the mountain air. September 16th. Friendly natives flocked on board with ears of Indian corn, pumpkins, and tobacco, which were readily bought for trifles. In the afternoon, they went 6 miles higher up and anchored near the marshes in the river opposite where Hudson now is. September 18th, they anchored between Skodak and Castleton, 18 miles above the Hudson, where Hudson went ashore in a canoe with an old Indian who was the chief of a tribe of 40 men and 17 women. There was a house, well-constructed of oak bark, singular in shape, with an arched roof. The Indians had a great quantity of corn beans. Two mats were spread, and food was brought in red wooden bowls. Two men were sent to the woods with bows and arrows for game, and brought back a pair of pigeons. A fat dog was also killed and skinned in great haste, with shells taken from the water. Before Hudson left for his ship at night, the Indians, thinking that the reason why he would not remain with them until morning was that he was afraid of their weapons, took their arrows, and breaking them in pieces before him, threw them into the fire. September 19th. Hudson sailed 2 leagues further up and anchored near where Albany now is. There the Indians came flocking on board, bringing grapes, pumpkins, and beaver and otter skins, which they exchanged for beads, knives, and hatchets. There they remained several days. While Hudson on his return was anchored near where the city of Hudson now is, 2 canoes full of Indians came up from Catskill, and 2 old men, one of whom gave him strips of beads and showed him all the country thereabouts. September 27th. He ran down the river 18 miles, sailing past the wigwams of the loving people of Catskill, and were very sorrowful for his departure, and anchored near Red Hook, where some of the crew went ashore to fish. I think, this journal gives us a great opportunity to feel what Hudson felt as mm-hmm. he came up the river on that small ship. It's actually quite small. If anybody ever saw the replica that sailed up and down the Hudson, it's now in Holland. But for years, this small ship went up and down the Hudson. And, I could just imagine it coming up near Catskill and stopping at the mouth of the creek and seeing, Native Americans coming out in their canoes, bearing gifts, very loving people. And that really does explain who the Lenni Lenape were in comparison to the more, warmongering group that were mm-hmm. further south. But I thought that was an interesting little backgrounder in terms
very
of our
interesting.
Native Americans.
I have a question. Skinned a dog. I'm just curious, did they eat them?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Were there wild dogs? Obviously, they must have been.
Where would they get a dog? I mean, this is the first time that a white man had come in this area. So it was probably, maybe a wolf pup or something, and they had been domesticated for quite some time.
Interesting.
Because really, all our dogs originally were, descendants of wolves. So, mm-hmm. Obviously they had dogs as pets, companions, but also as meat.
Very interesting. I'd like to thank you guys for stopping by and being my first interview subjects.
You did very well.
Thank you.
I appreciate your time. And again, this is an event at the Caro Library, mm-hmm. Sponsored by the Caro Historical Society. Local archaeologist, Catskill, the only archaeologist of this area, Greene County, Jay Ciccone. Saturday, November 7th. It is Saturday, correct?
That's correct.
Yes.
And one more time, a rundown of the contacts and ways to get tickets ahead of time, which is strongly encouraged, correct?
Correct. Feel free to contact me, Sylvia Hosenkopf, at 518-821-3852. You can also reach me via our Facebook page, messaging system, or just simply post something on the Caro Historical Society Facebook page. Lots of information about current events that the Historical Society are doing, lots of pictures, conversations about local history, and certainly we encourage the payment of the entrance fee ahead of time simply because you want to guarantee your seat. This is something nobody wants to miss because we've never had a conversation like this in my memory in Greene County where we've actually had an archaeologist come and talk about Native American culture. And Jay can actually take the Native American population story back to the paleo era, like when the glaciers were here. So he can take it from then all the way up to today.
This is an event not to be missed. Come with your questions. That's going pretty far back. One more question. Where exactly is the poorhouse in the park?
If you go down into Angelo Canna Park, mm-hmm. the what is today the Greene County Mental Health Building, the very old building at the very end of the park, is the old county farm, what is known as the almshouse, the poorhouse, the county farm.
Can you tell me anything about that?
I'm going to go by memory here.
Yeah, throw some stuff at me. This is interesting.
Well, the whole point of the creation of a poorhouse was part of our social development as a peoples. In the early days, there was no such a thing. I mean, if you were poor, if you were injured, if you were old and didn't have family around, what happened to you? You basically were on the street.
I'm thinking real Dickensian.
Well, this is way before Dickens.
Right.
And so, like, there was just nowhere to go because there was no social system to take care of someone that was disadvantaged. So the supervisors of Greene County developed an act, I guess, for our local area, and this was pretty much done throughout New York State because it was part of the new social awareness of needing to take care of these individuals, that they needed to create a poorhouse. And so Carroll was chosen because we are central to Greene County. And if you had to bring residents from, you know, the area of Halkett or Prattsville, or from New Baltimore, you were coming in equal distance. So it made sense that Carroll became the center for this poorhouse. And we had one, as the records I can recall, as early as the 1820s. But we did have a wood structure down in Angelo Canna Park, at least, you know, in the 1850s. I'm sure it was before that. And that building became somewhat decrepit. There's some great stories in the article in the Carroll Herald about, you know, what investigators found when they went to the building. And it became very apparent in about 1880 they needed to raise that rebuild that building because it was completely decrepit. And so they built a brand new brick structure, which we see today down in the park in 1882. So it's rather an important building because there's not that many poorhouse buildings still standing.
Really neat.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So we have the story of the poorhouse in our Carroll Herald. And to get that story, feel free to become a member of the Carroll Historical Society.
Awesome. Thank you guys for dropping by.
Thank you. Hope to see
you both again sometime for other discussion. We're just kind of talking about animal communication as a possible topic of conversation. We'll be here Thursday, so thank you guys for coming, and check out that event November 7th at the Carroll Library, the sponsored by the Carroll Historical Society. So I'll be back again to let you know about our pledge drive, which I think you know about, but I'm gonna talk to you about it anyway, because you need to know. 90.7 WGXC, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, your station.